Hello and welcome to Dvorak Horowitz Unplugged, an hour-long discussion of activity in the financial markets around the world, featuring columnist John C. Dvorak and money manager Andrew Horowitz. This conversation is casual and unrehearsed. Let's join John and Andrew now.
I'm John C. Dvorak.
I'm Andrew Horowitz.
Here we are.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. What day is it?
By the way, evening.
Yeah, evening. What day is it?
I don't know.
It's the 11th of February, 2020.
Yeah, February 11th.
Gotta
go figure.
Yeah, gotta put this down in the annals. Make sure that we are in good shape here. Let me close that. Anyway, so what's new?
Not much. Let's say Bernie Sanders is going to win New Hampshire, and everything's going as planned.
Yeah. And then it looks like Yang is out.
Well, that's about time.
Yeah. And then we got the big push by Bloomberg next week.
What's he going to do?
I guess he's going to make his debuts on TV and all.
Oh, brother.
Yeah.
Is he going to buy a bunch of time?
He is actually run up the advertising rates on regional radio, like the Sinclairs and all these other names out there, that he's run up the prices.
Oh, yeah, they're soaking him.
But he's also causing big problems for the rest of the gang.
Well, of course.
It's natural.
But he still is an unlikable person.
Yeah, I don't know who is likable in this whole batch, but and I'm getting tired of the Saturday Night Live bits. They're great, but it's enough already of this. They got to find something new. Seems that this is the only thing they have going is this debate bit they do now, and trying to get Larry David and all these other guys out there to imitate the craziness going. But it is not. Let's just say it's not an exciting group.
I would agree to that.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about some of the things that have been going on this week. We have a market snapping back, a major V move once again by the dip after a pretty bad week the week before. Markets came back pretty strong with this weird pattern that we're seeing. It Monday through Thursday seems to be kind of up days in the markets. And I think the last 4 or 5 weeks or so, Fridays have been disastrous. Nobody wants to hold into the weekend, reduce their positions, thinking that maybe some other news about the coronavirus or something else is going to, you know, go wrong. So it seems that this is a bit of a pattern developing. We have this narrative floating out there that the virus is now contained and a limited impact on the U.S. So everybody's like, oh, see, we dodged another bullet.
Yeah.
We saw the employment numbers, solid numbers coming out last week. The Academy Awards, less politics this year. A couple of weird things with somehow beating on the poor cows out there. But a few snide remarks by a few people. Something with about, oh, I have 45 seconds. That's not as much as John Bolton got on the stage.
No, it didn't get.
Yeah, it didn't get. China's economy is experiencing clearly a hard stop. This is a clear indication that we have some trouble ahead, but nobody seems to want to care. And the big news of the night, the limericks are back.
Yeah, I heard this. This was the buzz.
Yeah, this is, we got a lot of Twitters and emails and people asking me to, hey, get those limericks back. So we are back. We don't have a jingle like the exciting jingle like we had for the brain teasers. You know, those.
Well, the brain teaser person. Brain teaser. Maybe that person could do a teaser for the jingles.
Maybe.
Or the limericks.
So what's holding up the U.S. stock market? I think these are questions, and I'm throwing these out at you. Kind of going to pitch them in straight and narrow and see what you can do with them. We got Fed pumping. We got earnings outlook. We got TINA, which is there is no alternative. ETFs, just buy and hold. Algos, all the above.
I think it's mostly TINA. I think that's the only game in town. It's like you got a bunch of gamblers and there's only one casino. Well, you got to go there.
Yeah. It would seem that way. I had this morning an early meeting. I was invited. So somebody invited me. He says, listen, Andrew, I want you to invite you as my guest for a breakfast. And
Did you have to buy a timeshare?
No, but it was an award ceremony or an annual. It was actually one of these networking groups, and there's about 100 members, and they can invite guests. So there's about maybe close to 500 people in the room this morning for breakfast. And there was a speaker, Bob Dahl, who is the chief economist or head investment guy over at Nuveen. And I followed him for years. And I said, you know, I'll go. So he gives me the invitation. At 6:30 a.m. start.
Yeah, that's a no-go for me.
6:30 a.m. I'm like, what are you doing at 6? What are you possibly doing at 6:30? Well, we have a a little bit of meet and greet from 6:30 to 7. You have your coffee, 7 to 7:30. I said, you know what? I'll get there at 7. So I got there at like 10 to 7 this morning. It was very nice. But Bob Dahl was out on there. And one of the things that he talks about, and I followed him for years, and he constantly says this.
Bob Dahl?
Dahl, D-O-L-L, oh, Dahl. Yeah. He says in his conversations on CNBC and on Bloomberg that they are very constructive on stocks, on equities. Constructive. This word constructive. And it was interesting. I listened today. He talked for about 45 minutes. Very interesting conversation. Talked about Tina, that there is no alternative, not Tina, the name. But he talked and talked, and then afterwards I pulled him aside. I said, hey, how are you? Listen, maybe you come on my podcast, you'll be a guest. He said, hey, great idea. I said, you know what? You mentioned you're really not necessarily bullish. You're kind of neutral on stocks right now. But I'm telling you, you are bearish. He goes, well, what do you mean? So I said, well, I've been listening to you for years. And every conversation you have, you use a particular phrase. He goes, I do? I said, yeah, I've listened. And I called because I've noted that you do this, and I really haven't seen this before. He says, well, what is it? I said, well, you say I'm constructive on stocks. You didn't use that word once today in this entire conversation in 45 minutes of speaking. Not once. He goes, oh, it's interesting that you mentioned that. So I said, I'm thinking that that means this neutral stance that you're saying is just you're not wanting to overtly say that you are negative with the idea that you've already mentioned and you had a big slide up that said that this year's stock performance you believe is going to be a negative 4%. So
Andrew Horowitz, mind reader.
So, yeah, I think this Tina is I agree with you with the only game in town. And I think it's really appropriate where you mentioned it's the only casino. It does look to me as if we're also another phrase. We're the cleanest shirt in a dirty closet. Well, the cleanest shirt.
Yeah.
In terms of all the economies and stock markets.
I think that's a bigger deal than a lot of people like to imagine.
Yeah, because basically, where else are you going to go at this point? Do you want to invest your money in Europe, where Germany looks like their industrial production is not only dropping off a cliff, but when is it ever going to get better? You can invest in China. You can invest in Japan, Singapore. You can invest in Thailand right now with all the stuff going on around that area.
Yeah, you might as well invest in Brazil.
Yeah, right. You're going to be in Brazil, Argentina, Venezuela? I don't think so. So there's not a lot of options, although most economists and analysts have come out this year, as they had last year, stating that emerging markets are the place to be.
Well, if I'm going to go emerging markets, I'm going, just to say this, I don't have any stocks or anything to recommend, Congo.
The Congo?
Yeah.
United something of Congo?
Congo.
Congo. What does that even mean? I don't understand what that means.
It's an African country.
I understand African. So you think you should invest there for some reason?
Yes.
With no backup or any kind of analysis, just a statement?
Yes, that's exactly what you heard.
All right.
Now, well, it's not that I came out of the blue. I dreamt this. I woke up and thinking this. I had heard a number of economic analysts from Africa talking about Congo, and their pitch was quite compelling.
Wow.
There's a lot going on there.
Okay. I don't even know how you invest in that.
I don't either. That's why I have nothing to say other than Congo.
Right. Congo. So Congo. All right. Okay. Moving along, the employment report this week came out. We had 225,000 new additions added to the payrolls. 158,000 was the consensus. Wages up 0.3%, 3.6% unemployment rate, ticked up a little bit from the 3.5% rate. U.S. labor economy, although that's good news. And the number we saw from ADP on Wednesday was also very good news, over well over 200,000. The U.S. economy created about 500,000 fewer jobs, 500,000 fewer jobs in 2019 and 2018 than it first appeared. See, what happens is they do these numbers, and it's just like we've talked about 1,000 times.
We've talked about this for a decade.
That they come up with these numbers and they do these statistical calculations with this, they call it the birth and death rate of companies. And if a company goes down and it's out of business and there's all these firings, well, the people are going to move over there. Well, they seem to have missed the mark. So the adjustment, although you'll never see that because it's 2 years ago and a year ago, so who cares? 500,000 people weren't really added to the payrolls over that period of time.
Well, it makes sense to me if you're living around this area with all the homeless.
Yeah, so it's like anything else. If you found out that there was a tremendous problem with, I don't know, a company, but you find out 3 years later, nobody acts upon it. So you might as well just keep it hush. That's why the Fed minutes and the information oftentimes takes months to come out. Matter of fact, I think...
Well, I'd like to know how they screwed this up.
Well, because they just didn't
calculate. Are they continuing to screw it up? Is it being screwed up as we speak?
Probably. Their calculation and their mathematics and their spreadsheets that they use have a certain assumptions that are baked into the process. It seems that there is something wrong with that process.
Yeah, half-baked.
Yeah, 500,000 people. That's listen, in the big scheme of things, if we're adding 200,000 a month, and that's 2 million people a year, 4 million people over 2 years, so we're talking about 10%. So when they look at, like, the polls can differentiate by a few percent, well, it's 10%, it seems, for the employment number. So if they really added this month to 225,000, maybe they only added 200. But they can go the other way as well. I mean, I'm sure the next time they're going to take this into consideration and blow it on the other side.
It could.
Yeah.
But they don't seem to be doing that so often.
And we have a lot of charts to look at tonight. A lot of charts. So these will be available on the show notes for episode number 492. On dhunplugged.com. So the first one is the employment report. I just put these in up and down here. It's a little bit small. But you can see the major jump on the lower chart of the ADP private payrolls.
Yeah, jumped.
About 130,000 last month, 270 this month. Got a little bit of a tick up in the change of payrolls, but still right along that six-month average on the top chart, the official number. And then the jobs details, this was something I wanted to explore with you. It's interesting. This is a table, chart-ish table, bar chart thing. It's the January, the latest report, the one-month net change in jobs that added up to this 225,000 new adds. So it seems that we had the most in education and health services, right? 72,000. You see that?
And we have a lot of low-paying jobs in there.
Then construction up 44,000.
Yeah, those are all, I see a lot of construction.
Leisure and hospitality, 36,000. Transportation and warehousing, 28,000. Professional business services, 21,000. Government, 19,000. All the way down to information of plus 5,000. On the negative side.
What is information?
Information must be technology, right? The technology sector.
I don't know.
Yeah, communications and information technology. Interestingly enough, logging didn't increase or decrease at all.
Yeah, zero.
No change. Everybody's happy. Everybody, the loggers just hanging out and miners just doing their thing. Financial activities down 1,000. Utilities down 1,400, which seems like a lot for utilities. Like, what's the big layoffs going on in utilities?
I don't know. Maybe they're computerizing a lot of stuff or gridding things. I have no idea.
Seems like a lot. Retail trade down 8,300, which that's makes some good sense that we're seeing some problems in the retail area. Manufacturing down 12,000 also makes sense due to the fact that we saw manufacturing slow for about 7 months until just last month. but it was continuing to slow. And so they're finally saying, you know what, enough. We're getting rid of some people here. But education and health services, I mean, we're talking about, what, teachers? We're talking about hospitals. We're talking about doctors.
Nurses.
72,000 on the plus side. Staff. It's a lot.
Yeah, they're ramping up for all these health companies,
the HMOs, the
PPOs. Probably a lot of insurance been baked into that too.
Yeah. So maybe they're also ramping up because they're trying to make sure that they're protected against the coronavirus.
I don't think so.
No. Don't think so?
Nah.
No. Well, there's some new information about the coronavirus. It seems that Chinese researchers say that the pangolin, which is a mammal that is illegally trafficked for its scales and its meat, is a potential intermediate host for coronavirus and has killed more than so far 600 or 1,000 people at this point. Have you ever seen a pangolin?
I don't even know what. I never even heard of a
fascinating
pangolin.
Fascinating beast. So they say this, the latest discovery will be of great significance for the prevention and control of the origin of the virus. This is from South China Agricultural University. The pangolin, you only hear this kind of stuff on DH Unplugged. The pangolin is the only scaled mammal. Take a look at this picture.
Okay. Let me take a look at the picture. And
with that in mind, I want one of these. It's like an anteater.
Oh, yeah, that thing. It's like an anteater with scales. I've seen these.
How cool is that animal? It's like a dinosaur. It's like a cross between a crocodile, an anteater, and like a hippopotamus or something. Look at those legs.
Yeah, it looks like a rhino legs.
That is a weird-looking animal, isn't it?
Yeah, I'd say.
So somehow people are deciding that they want to eat this. The scales probably, people think that it's like probably pangolin soup in China. You know, they have the shark fin soup.
I've never heard of it, but it's probably the Chinese are known, especially the Cantonese, but I don't know if Wuhan's Cantonese or not, but it's they are known for eating everything.
Yeah, and this is pretty amazing looking. I would take this, you know, some people have the baby pigs, you know, those mini micro pigs. Some people have some.
You'd rather have one of these.
I want one of those. I don't think I could train it probably, but it looks pretty cool. Now, the director of the World Health Organization warned Sunday that countries outside of China should be prepared for the spread of the deadly coronavirus to accelerate, saying that it's possible it's the only tip of the iceberg we've seen. So the WHO went from, hey, don't worry about it, to, oh, it's a problem, to now, oh, my God, it's going to spread within like a week.
Yeah.
It's kind of crazy.
Yeah, that gives you a lot of confidence in this operation, the WHO.
I think the first stab they made at this whole deal in an attempt to tamp down the concern was all about markets getting, you know, going sideways and getting crazy. And everybody, even in the WHO, is really concerned about markets, it seems, these days. And they want to make sure the economies didn't have a problem. But now we have this one cruise ship that's just still cruising around. Nobody will take this cruise ship in, right? It's like Exodus. You ever see the movie Exodus?
Yeah, I did, actually. The same kind of thing.
Yeah, they
won't. Now you can't dock here. Go someplace else.
Yeah, you can't dock anywhere. And they send them back to their home. We have coronavirus on that ship in New Jersey, which I think they cleared a bunch of people. We have the one in Japan on that ship. The ship lines. Who in their right mind is going to plan a cruise outside of maybe, or anywhere for that matter, with the thought that you're cooped up on a ship for the next 2 weeks with the potential for this? It doesn't make any sense. So with that, we are seeing that China is, in my, what I've seen, pretty much their economy, the streets are barren. The manufacturing part of things, especially in that one province where it is situated, is a big problem because a lot of technology is manufactured there. There's a lot of business in that province. And again, our markets don't seem to care about it. China seems to be okay in coming back because there's a massive amount of money being pushed into this. But one of the things is of interest is something we haven't looked at in a long time. Long time. And that's the Baltic Dry Index.
Oh, yes, that's right. I brought that up some years ago, and it never really coincided with anything to make it very valuable, but yeah.
So recently, I don't know if this has to do with global trade or what's going on with the tariffs. I'm not sure what's going on, but it peaked in September 2019. Take a look at this chart. It was up at 2,500. This is the cost of shipping, the average cost of shipping on this one particular shipping metric and through cargo ships. It peaked in September 2019 at 2,500. It's now at like 415.
What the hell is that all about? So you think that had to do with that? Had to have something to do with the tariffs?
I think it has to do with the tariffs. I think that it clearly
this is a crazy, crazy chart, by the way.
Yeah, but it would seem to me. I mean, it did dip down in the fourth quarter of 2018 into 19. And then it picked up dramatically as everything got cheap and money was cheap and stocks went up and then people were excited and everything just blew up and there was probably a lot of activity. But I think this is a real good tell that there is a lot, there's something lurking behind the scenes with regard to these tariffs, maybe even add to that recently about the coronavirus, probably that drop from 1,500 in the beginning of 2020 down to where we are now.
Yeah, but it's almost though they anticipated. Well, the coronavirus was having... There were incidents.
Right, in December.
Yeah.
So I thought this was really interesting that it's so sharply. I mean, we're talking not from like, 1,000 to 750. We're talking about 2,500. No,
this is outrageous. This is the worst I've ever seen it.
Yeah, this is a massive, even if it wasn't at 2,500. Let's say it was somewhere at the other previous peaks at 1,750. Right? Down to 415. I mean, that's just horrendous. Just horrendous. So I think this does give us some insight that there is something going on with global transportation, manufacturing, and trade that's really not showing up in the markets. I don't know if that's going to ever show up. But you have to wonder if you keep on adding all of this together. Take each piece and put it together. Okay, well, we have the tariff issue. We have, the global trade issue. We have Europe slowing down dramatically, problems in the Middle East. We have issues with regard to now this new, pandemic issue, whatever it is. It just seems to me that you kind of put them all together and lay them out and try to be objective. You're like, well, this doesn't look so good, right?
No.
Something's just doesn't smell quite right. So.
No, I agree. It's just very, thing is, how far out is it?
Yeah. So, I think that with the Fed continually pumping in, they pumped in another $30 billion this week. I mean, they continue to... They can stretch it out a little bit. Now, we've been talking about Tesla.
Yes, you have, you mean.
Well, we have been, but yes, we did the short of Tesla together. Which we got knocked out.
Yes.
I'll show you, but...
We just got knocked out. So that was one of the few times that failed, by the way.
It didn't fail. We made a little money.
Buck.
Yeah, a little bit. But here's that blow off top. So came back down to earth momentarily. There was the concern about the closure of their plant in China and a delay in their deliveries of various vehicles there. Reached a high of 968 and then reversed under $700 that day. So it reached 968, came down a little bit to, I don't know, call it 890. Then the next day came down. Pre-market, it was like 690. And this chart clearly shows you this parabolic move with the slope down. Doesn't show you the 690 because this is a daily chart. But Tesla, definitely something going on there. And a lot of people are saying that they believe that the chart on Tesla in particular, and the way it's moved, is very indicative of something bigger out there. This is what they're saying. That it's very reminiscent of the blow-off top with stocks back in the year 2000. Where companies without massive earnings and had problems with their balance sheets, nobody cared. They just bought into it and they just got crazy about the whole thing. And Tesla's like the...
So the idea is that this is representative of insanity?
Yes, exactly.
Could be. I mean, this, by the way, happened in 1929. In fact, if you look at this chart, anyone who wants to look at it, except for the little collapse there, it looks a lot like the chart from up to September or so in 1929, the Dow Jones.
Right.
We're just skyrocketed at the end. Their last 3 months, it just went nuts.
And that's usually the final capitulation of the shorts and those that are not in. And the fear of missing out and all that goes into it. We have cheap money now. All that's happening here, people are going, you know, crazy. So, I don't know. We'll see if this is anything to say for the rest of the market. It does look like we're getting a little bit toppy on some of this. And this bid talk, right? So now you have also these rumors swirling around, like Google should buy Tesla. This is the talk that's going around now.
That would be something to see.
Yeah. And there was a weird, I think we talked about this last week, turned out to be nothing. Two things turned out to be nothing this week, actually. The first one was that eBay was going to be bought by the owner of the New York Stock Exchange. Not remembering it. Anyway, they were going to be bought. Stock was up like 9%. Then 2 days later, like, nah, we're not going to do that. We're not moving ahead with that. So it was Intercontinental Exchange, ICE. I don't even know what that had to do with. We talked about this. Like, where does that fit in? Didn't go eBay down. Then we had yesterday a news article, and I think it was Business Insider, that said that Slack just secured a deal with IBM. You know, Slack, the messaging system.
Yeah.
They secured a deal with IBM. All IBM workers are going to be, are going to be using Slack from now on. 350,000 employees will be the biggest deal, the biggest company that Slack has ever brought on, and that's going to be major. Okay. Well, what's interesting about that is, it later comes out that the stock is halted. Now the discussion is, so Slack is being used, big deal with IBM. IBM needs something like this. Maybe IBM is going to buy them. Stock is halted towards the end of the day. Slack comes out with an announcement, says, you know, just to let everybody know, IBM has been a customer of ours for a very long time. They make up about 10% or over 10% of our total income. And nothing has changed with that relationship. So this whole narrative that went from...
It was bogus.
Totally bogus.
Anybody who was actually promoting the narrative didn't do enough research to even know that fact?
Or they promoted it just to promote it.
Yeah, it's just pump and dump.
Pump and dump. So this is kind of the environment we live in. And I don't know why, you know, like Business Insider won't get sanctioned for that. It would seem to me that that's something that somebody needs to look into. Like, why would you report that even as a rumor if none of the core stuff is even reasonably true?
Yeah, they should look into it. Some hanky-panky, it looks like, was going on.
Yeah. Some earnings news out. We have Bed Bath & Beyond. Have you shopped there at all lately?
I have, actually. I went there recently.
What'd you get? Like a soup ladle or a scale?
Like a plastic bin.
A plastic bin. For what? $7, $6, $5?
A place for plastic bins.
Yeah. There's a couple other places for it, like the Container Store that nobody goes to. I don't even know.
Nobody goes there, but you can also get the good plastic bins at Target.
So you got your plastic bins there. Did you notice anything? Was it a busy store? Was there any traffic, or did they good end caps?
There's always somebody there. I mean, I've never been there in the last 10 years where it's been crowded.
Well, they came out with their earnings. They missed badly. This is not the first time they missed badly either. They say that holiday traffic was poor. Really bad seasonal traffic during the holidays.
Well, I'm not getting those weekly 15% off things from them anymore.
There are so many of those out there in the universe that it's amazing that anybody would ever pay full price for anything at Bed Bath & Beyond.
Yeah, but I haven't gotten any, now that you mention it, for probably 6 months. I think they changed their marketing strategy, and that's probably what did this to them.
It could
remember the time that Old Navy decided that, we don't need to, or the Gap. It was either Gap or I think it was the Gap. So we don't need to advertise on television anymore because they were pounding the airwaves with ads for the Gap and Old Navy, both same company. And then they pulled back completely and they damn near went broke.
Well, for whatever is going on at Bed Bath & Beyond, there was a couple of private equity firms interested that popped the stock like 20% one day. Last earnings was terrible. New CEO came in, going to, you know, right the ship and do our thing here. And stock was down 25% or maybe even 26% after the close, after this really just obnoxious. I don't know anybody that, well, let me just say this. I'd be hard pressed to go there because pretty much everything in that store, whether it's a towel or a bed sheet, I can find online somewhere and I don't have to deal with not, you know, going there and searching and hunting for what I want to buy.
I disagree with this. Why? I like that store.
What do you like about
it? It's very entertaining. You go in there and you see, I didn't know I needed one of those.
Ah, right. Like if I went in there, what would I need? I need something I haven't bought in a long time. I need a lime juicer.
I bet you if you went in there and spent a few minutes roaming around just aimlessly, you'd buy something.
Yeah, I'm sure I would. I'm telling you, I need a lime juicer. I recently
go to a good Mexican grocery store. You got tons of them. You got a ton of
$3
grocery stores. And get a good squeezer, one of those one-handed jobs. They really do the trick.
I went to, where was it? Williams-Sonoma.
No, you didn't pay 10 times as much. I wouldn't buy anything.
I had a lime juicer in my hand. I said, you know, this is a pretty heavy lime juicer. It seems pretty good. It seems like it's going to last a long time. It was like $22.
Yeah, you can get $5 at a Mexican grocer.
I said, this is ridiculous. Why would I buy something here? And I was so angry about this apparent ripoff that I walked up to. I said, excuse me. Is this the right price? Is this priced incorrect? What's the story with this? Oh yeah, that's right. It seems to be very expensive. I don't understand. Well, that's the price. I said, you know what? I'm not buying this here. And you know what? The things that I was going to buy, I'm putting back on the shelf. That's what I said.
Wow.
That's what I said.
One of those guys.
Yep. And I left. I did the same kind of thing when I went to Lucky's, you know, Lucky's,
this grocery store.
Yeah, out of business. Went bankrupt.
They did?
Last week, yep. Selling off all their stores.
I wonder what they're going to do with the store that we have over here. But it used to be an Albertsons. They just they licensed the Lucky's name.
Yeah, they're going to be Publix down here is taking over some. I think maybe Kroger is going to take over the rest because Kroger was a big supporter and backer of them.
Yeah.
Lucky's I walked in several times, twice. And the first time I'm like, I bought a few things. Second time I walk in, I'm like, okay, I bought a couple of things. I had stuff in my cart. I'm like, you know, I don't like the selection. I left. I went in the third time. I had a whole cart piled through of stuff. I had a list of things I was going to make. I go over to the produce. The worst produce I ever saw in my life. It was, the stuff was either not ripe at all or overripe.
Huh.
And I said to the manager, what's the story with the produce here? It's terrible. I'm sorry. It's what it is. I said, you know what? Take my cart. I'm out of here. I'm one of those guys. I'm out of here. Out. I'm done. So no wonder why they went bankrupt. A lot of people just probably left baskets disgusted with their experience there and walked out the door.
Well, we have our Lucky's over here in the West Coast is a pretty good operation, seems to me, except they do have, they stock certain things. And then if you expect them to be there again, you never find them. If I find they have the inconsistencies are somewhat annoying.
I mean, I don't know. I think they were having a crisis, an identity crisis. They were trying to be somewhere in a cross between, it seems to be like a Whole Foods and a Trader Joe's.
Yeah, that's a combination nobody wants.
Yeah, so I think that it just made no sense to me. I didn't understand what the point of my going there was.
Huh.
Oh, well. Uber, their earnings came out, still working on a severe loss, but they have a new catchphrase that was given to them by the media. And of course, when Lyft came out with their earnings last quarter, they used it very successfully. And it's the new path to profitability. Path to profitability. And this is something new that's being used by companies that don't have profitability. Don't have profits.
Yeah.
We have a path because now the markets, and you can see what's happened with a lot of these IPOs that came out. For example, for a while there was, ever since the WeWork deal, ever since WeWork went south, the concern was, okay, we see that you have a running start here. We see that you're expanding. We see that you're burning through capital. What's the path to profitability? And that, I think that, they're looking to appease the people a little bit longer. And since it worked a few times, why not use it again? So you had Uber come out. First of all, Uber come out with their earnings. Stock was making its way back from about low of about 26 in November to 41 now. Lyft came out with their earnings tonight. Lyft was still at a major loss. And the question then becomes, what's the path to profitability really mean? Is that going to be profitable or not burning as much cash where they can sustain themselves at least, maybe with not actually making money? Because between Uber and Lyft, you got to wonder why they can't be profitable at this point to begin with.
Well, it's always baffled me that the initial idea, let's say we wanted to start a company like this, is to say, we'll pay you to pick somebody up and drop them off a certain percentage. You're going to pay for everything. And all we have is a computer that's going to set up the deal. Mm-hmm. And so the computer just sets up these deals between some, third parties that are going off, picking people up and dropping them off. And we skim money from that transaction. Now, how can you not make money doing that?
I have no idea. Isn't that the question?
Yeah.
I mean,
it's always been the question I've always asked.
They're putting too much money in technology and paying too much for people to sit there and write code and unwrite code and then rewrite code?
I have no idea. It doesn't seem like it's that hard to write that code.
Here's the code. When your car shows up, something's attached to a light that turns it purple, and that's your car. Or the new thing is to make sure safety, that's a big issue. I was in D.C., and I was at the Capitol building. I called an Uber. I got picked up. He said, before we leave, you need to give me the number that was just texted to you. It was like a second authentication process. So I gave him the number. He punched that into his phone, and we were therefore matched, I guess. That was my Uber Uber driver, and I was his.
Well, even pastor. That's not complicated code.
No, not at all. Yeah, I don't know what to do.
I mean, generally speaking, you're supposed to check the license plate, of the car that's supposed to be picking you up, and that should take care of the problem, period. But I guess there's scammers out there because things are so popular and they're worldwide. I don't know. It's just the whole thing I've never been comfortable with the whole thing. I knew it was a scam from the beginning. The idea that this is ride sharing. It's always bothered me because it's as if I'm going to take a drive to Los Angeles. I'll pick a couple people up on the way. I'm going to share my ride to LA. I'm driving. And I could do that. Yeah. It's not what's going on, though. That's not what's going on. No. People are acting just like taxi cabs.
When I go to a restaurant, am I doing kitchen sharing? No. I'm going to a restaurant. When I get into a car that drives me somewhere, it's a freaking taxi. Same thing.
It's a gypsy cab is what it amounts to.
Yeah, clearly. But, who cares? It's just the point
of somebody. The fact that they got away with this with the local governments, which had licensing arrangements with cab companies, which brought the city income, and they bypassed that system and then kind of gypped the city. It's just, again, another thing that's completely baffling, but okay.
So now this whole idea of path to profitability, we have other major...
There's no path to profitability.
Well, there's a lot of other companies trying to come public now, and they're trying to really, get this whole thing excited about this path to profitability. One of the recent IPOs that came out this week was Casper. Remember we talked about this? Did we talk about this? Casper, the mattress company?
No, and I'm surprised we haven't since you harp on the whole bedding idea.
Yeah, I have a harp. I'm a harper. So so Casper comes out, another mattress company. Last thing we need is another freaking mattress company. The company that allows you to borrow their mattress or try their mattress for 180 days and send it back if you don't want it. So you just do that, and then you go into a different name maybe and have your wife get one delivered somewhere, deliver it to your office, take it home. Who knows? Get free mattresses for a long time. This company goes public and not profitable. They're thinking about doing an IPO at about 17 to 19. Cut it back. Now they're doing it at like 12. They do the IPO at 12. It finally comes out. Goes from 12 to 15 the first day. And where is it today? Let's just look at this. CSPR stock. Currently trading at $9.92.
It sounds about right.
Yeah. Sounds about $9.90 too rich to me.
Well, you might be right about that too. It could be a penny stock.
Yep.
So it's a penny stock idea.
It went to $15.85 the high. 52-week low is $9.72. It's just sitting right above that at $9.92. And down a little bit after hours, too. So there you go. Bitcoin getting a big buzz. It's up 43% this year to date. Breaks above $10,000 this week again. And now you're seeing all over Twitter the, I told you so. I knew it. I told you it was coming back. It was a temporary setback. It was just some selling and some people just moving out of it. And question is this going to hold on or is this another fake out?
I don't know. I don't follow it. I don't care to follow it. I'm not interested. I already missed out. If I was smart, I would have bought like $50 worth of 25 cents a coin. And I wouldn't even be doing this podcast.
No, you would be. You would be. But I find that there's a lot of Bitcoin elite out there. You know what I'm talking about? They have this very bizarre vision of the world. They're like the, I don't know, they're a different breed of people. They talk very strangely. They tweet very oddly. It's like when you read the tweet, you're like, what is he talking about with the decentralization thing and how we, that should be with our lives.
Yeah,
and
no, their vision of the universe is not the same as
understand.
Ours.
I don't understand. I've tried. I just don't understand it. One of the things that you look at a lot is insider buying, insider selling. And you talk about how insider selling is, you know, something that you got to take with a grain of salt, maybe on a,
right.
For a lot of different reasons it happens. Well, the Royal Caribbean unit, Azamara Club Cruise Lines, which I love that. They have three ships now. That's the one I took to into Greece and around that area into Slovenia and Croatia. The CEO, Larry Pimentel, sold 16,000 shares at $120 a piece on February 6th. So the stock closed at $118 on February 5th. Shares of Royal Caribbean have fallen 17% since January 17th, of course, on the concerns over the coronavirus outbreak. So you think that this guy selling this block of shares is indicative of anything?
In this case, he might be onto something because he's worried about the coronavirus and he wanted to get some get rid of some. If he does a buyback, then he's obviously trading the company. We'll see.
Foxconn
not the kind of thing like you said. You can't really bank on this sort.
In Foxconn, which is a major supplier of iPhones in China, in Hubei, Wuhan area. They're planning to resume production this week, but I think it was only 10% of their production was going to be put back online. So I don't know. We're going to see because they supply electronics for Apple and Amazon, Google and Huawei. They're the world's biggest iPhone assembler. They make the Huawei smartphones, the Kindle tablet and the Echo speakers. They also supply HP, Dell and most other major electronic brands. So I don't know how this is going to play out with supply. I don't know if prices are going to go crazy or people are just not going to be able to get anything.
They're not going to be able to jack up the price.
Yeah. We got to see how that's going to play out with the companies, though. It doesn't look like Apple's too affected by this.
Yet.
Yeah. You know, Kyle Bass, the relatively famous hedge fund and a major critic of China. You know who he is?
Yeah, I have heard of him. I don't read his stuff.
Well, he's pretty on this whole China thing. He's been on for a long time. He's like John Bolton on China. Isn't John Bolton the one that wrote the book on China? Or is that the Lighthouse? I don't think so. It was a Lighthouser. So he's just on it, okay? On it hard. And he tweeted that the virus should spread to Chinese leadership.
Wow.
Then he removed it and deleted it. I would think that would have been in the days where we're seeing Zero Hedge get blasted. That could be a breach.
Yeah, should have been kicked off the air.
Yep.
But I'm surprised he won't get a visa, that's for sure.
Yeah. It's still not clear why. I don't understand why so many people do such weird. It seems that people lose their mind. It's like Twitter is like the equivalent of drunk texting while you're sober. People feel they could tweet anything.
Yeah, they make that mistake.
It happens. They do. So, it's like Twitter is this weird. It brings out the weird in people.
Yes.
Mm. Consumer debt, U.S. household debt exceeds $14 trillion for the first time ever. Americans increased their borrowing for the 22nd straight quarters.
Yeah, that's not good. I don't like that. That's a number I don't like. This goes in with your other numbers. It fits in there right in there with all the bad stuff going on.
Yeah, that we're utilizing debt to fund all of our purchases.
Yeah.
Yep. All right.
Which are only made available to us by more debt.
Right, and we fix it by even adding more debt on top of that.
Yeah.
Well, we come to the part of the show where we say, hey, you know what? If you join what you're hearing, especially those of you in the chat room, a lot of names in the chat room tonight. Actually, there was a lot of names. I got a number of people in there. But do us a favor, or not do us a favor, do yourself a favor. Donate to the show. Help us out with funding what we do here each and every week, because it is because of you that we do this each and every week. And unless you want John to buy Bitcoin and hope for the best in the future, it's important to give. Give with your heart, with your soul, with your wallet. Go over to dhunplugged.com, click on the donate button, and just provide a little bit of a thank you. That's really what we're doing here. And if you do get any information, any enjoyment, maybe we help you fall asleep. Maybe you get a good stock idea. Maybe get a little education and insight. Whatever it may be, it's time to, hey, you know what? That's what we're here for. So donate over with the yellow button over on dhunplugged.com. So here's a big... This is where we get into some of the strange stuff that's going on in the world, this section. AOC, who, if you don't know who AOC is at this point, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who is from New York. She's a congresswoman person. It seems that former CNBC anchor Michelle Caruso Cabrera, you know who that is?
I don't watch... I think I may know who it is, but I don't watch CNBC much anymore.
She is a very smart individual, oftentimes covered the international beat. You know, she was sent out to all the various international areas a lot of times, spoke several languages, very smart woman, very well educated. She is now challenging AOC in the Bronx Queens seat in Congress.
A lot of people think AOC is going to take her. She's going to take on and try to get Chuck Schumer's Senate seat.
Wow. This may be just the way to do it, huh?
I don't know.
So I thought it was interesting. A CNBC anchor doing this. But also the big thing that was going on in Twitterville was that AOC was talking about economics and talked about. She was talking about Keynesian economic theory.
Keynesian. Yeah.
I can never pronounce that word. Keynesian. And she said Milton she used the word
Milton Keynes.
He used his first name as Milton, which maybe she was thinking of Friedman.
Yeah, she was thinking of Milton Friedman.
And combined it with Keynes, and just so everything that she said after that, nobody heard.
I like the name Milton Keynes.
Yeah, it's a lot. What was the other? What was his name? Maynard?
John Maynard. Is John Maynard Keynes? Something like that.
So got that wrong. So everybody discounted everything she said, which I don't know what she said anyway, but basically blasted her for like 3 days about this.
Yeah. Well, she knows how to get attention.
Yeah.
Milton Keynes.
So we've been waiting for this for a long time. The potential merger and trial, or if you will look at the judgment of whether or not T-Mobile and Sprint would be allowed to merge, because that would take us from four major carriers in the U.S. to three.
Yeah.
And there's some concern about antitrust and the problem about what happens to competition and prices and price fixing, and then it's not going to be as competitive
an
environment.
It's all price fixing.
And all this, right?
Yeah.
Well, they got approved last night.
Oh, did they? Finally. I knew it was coming.
T-Mobile stock was up 6%. Sprint up 75%.
Yeah, we screwed it up.
So now it's going to be three. And now, with this, there are already lawsuits that are trying to reverse this.
Yeah.
So this is going to drag on a little bit longer. I don't know if it's going to happen. You know, if you can't get Roger Stone to get a decent amount of, you know, did you see what happened with Roger Stone tonight?
Yeah.
He's not getting much time, it doesn't seem.
Well, he shouldn't. He didn't do that much.
Besides being a jerk.
It's like he hit somebody over the head or anything.
Yeah. So do you think that this is going to be good for the competitive environment and okay?
Of course not.
No. So
how could it be?
Why are they allowing it? I mean, it's obvious that Sprint.
I don't get it. I don't know why they allow half of these mergers. Just one guy buying out the competition. I mean, how is buying your competition good for competition? It makes no sense.
The other thing is, it does look like with the stock of Sprint up 75%, that without this deal, there would have been a major problem there. In other words, it seems that, you know, they were pricing in.
Might be not a bad short if this deal gets pulled.
Yeah, and possibly what is the upside anyway?
Yeah, what is the upside? There is none.
I don't know.
They stay in business.
Let's see where. That was last night. So, yeah, 77% today at 8:52. It was dropping down from 7. Let's kind of go back a year. So 5 years. Let's go 5 years. So it's still not at its 5-year high. Back in 2017, it was at 8:57. So it's close to those levels that it was 5 years ago. Back in 2017. I don't know. Crazy stuff going on. Retail malls, another one of these doozies that happened. You alerted to this in January. You looked at Simon Property Group and you said, hey, something's going on here, right?
That's exactly correct.
So on Monday, Simon Property Group said announced that it entered an agreement to acquire mall real estate investment Taubman Centers, an all-cash deal valued at about $3.6 billion. Simon will pay $52.50 per share for a 51% premium over the stock's closing price on Friday. The deal is immediately expected to boost Simon's funds from operations and be at least 3% accretive on an annualized basis after the closing. So what we have is major problems. And again, just like this is very similar to the T-Mobile Sprint deal, right? Something there's a lot of problems and we're just buying the competition now and just going to roll it up into one big company.
One big giant company with cutting the overhead in half.
Yeah. So this may be something with the low interest. People are wondering, why is this going on? Well, we have a very low interest rate environment. It makes it very easy to lend money out there, issue bonds, issue debt, have a lot of cash on the balance sheet, on the books from that, and maybe go out and do something like this, especially if it's, I mean, a Simon and a Taubman are essentially the similar companies, right? And what they do, how they do it.
Yeah, they're almost identical.
Right, different regions, a little bit of a different process, but one of them was really having trouble. So maybe this is going to be, a trend.
Yeah, let's just make a big giant company out of companies having trouble. That's great.
Right.
This is like the joke, the watermelon joke, where the guy says, I'm going to start a company selling watermelons. I'm going to go buy these watermelons, put them in a truck, and then I'm going to go out and sell them. He says, well, what are you going to pay for the watermelons? I'm going to pay $2 for the watermelons. I'm going to go out and sell them, and I'm going to sell a lot of them because I'm going to sell them for $2. And the guy says, how are you ever going to make any money doing that? And the guy's follow-up was, I'm going to buy more trucks. So that's kind of what we're talking about here.
Yeah, I mean, it's like the idea of you also, the same thing somebody was talking about, well, if I borrow $10 million and I put that in my bank account, does that mean that I'm rich and I'm a 10 millionaire?
Well,
no, because I have debt against it.
Oh, you mean about, yeah. No, it's just a joke.
Yeah, or I borrow $10 million, and I'm not a 10 millionaire, but I borrow $10 million, and what I do is I give myself a salary of $1 million a year. Does that mean I'm really making $1 million a year and look at how great my salary is? No, because I got debt against it. So just by merging the companies, there is clearly some accretive actions that go on. There's overlap, there's benefits, there's cost factors that are cut because there's a duplication of services in some areas. You have some staff that doesn't have to be there. You know, one single overhead management company on the deal. You know, there definitely are some benefits to the process. And easy enough with a Sprint, a telephone company, with a Sprint and a T-Mobile, where now you're going to merge all this together and kind of everybody's going to run one line. So the cost factors of marketing a less, right, just one marketing plan here, that's cut dramatically. A lot less people that are required necessarily to run the operation, maybe not as little people or fewer people that need to be doing things like maintenance on the poles and all that, right? But still, you have a significant amount of reduction of overlapping expenses. So something to think about. All right. Without any further ado, it is time for the Fed Limericks.
Here we go.
And I mentioned that, and I didn't get any back.
We only have one here.
We only have one because I am starting it off.
Okay.
This is open to the gang. This is open to the listeners. Send your...
So anyone out there can submit these things.
Yep. Submit them to dhemail@dhunplug.com. dhemail@dhunplug.com. Send them to me. We'll put them on here. We'll read them. John will score them. And we're getting this machine back up and running. So we're going to start off. We're going to prime the pumps with one that I wrote, which may or may not be good because I'm rusty as well. And the thing that we ask is that it has to do with the Fed and finance, that kind of stuff, right? So put that in there.
Fed, banks, banks.
So this is my entry for the week. And like I said, we're taking yours as well, but this is my entry for the week. Here we go. In the central banks, we do trust to rescue us from a great big bust. They hand out the money like warm bee honey flowing to the pockets of the rich upper crust.
It's not bad. Kind of botched the read there.
Yeah, sorry.
I got to give you a B for that.
B, well, that's good. John.
Well, it's got the word B in there, too. I think that was the hint.
Ah.
But you get a B.
A B. All right, well, let's see if you could better me on there. What does the chat room think? What does the chat room grade me on this? Let me know what that is. We'll kind of kick back what that is. All right, so send them in to dhemail@dhunplugged.com. This is a game that we play. It's not a solicitation to buy or sell any security. It's not a recommendation of any kind. Nothing on the show should be considered investment advice or a recommendation. If you choose to invest in any of the stocks mentioned, you should know that it may carry risk, along with the risk of a loss of principal. You should also seek out professional financial advice for your particular situation. We assume no risk as these are not to be considered recommendations. Horowitz Company, myself, or John C. Dvorak may invest in any of the securities mentioned, and we'll disclose that on the website under the weekly stock picks section. You can go to dhunplugged.com and see all the names we discuss in the segment, along with the performance information from the date discussed, as well as any additional important disclosures. So taking a look at the list, we keep on getting... things kicked off. Take the list.
Yeah. Well, we got a bunch of items got kicked off on the mouse. A bunch of items got kicked off. Three of them, actually. The advanced drainage systems, which was an insider's thing, got kicked off. But it still ended up with a 25% gain. That huge. Was mine. It was an insider's deal.
Huge, huge, huge.
That was a big one.
Yeah.
Then Tesla, your pick, the short, actually – is starting to look pretty good. As at 809, you would have, but unfortunately, because of the whipsaw, you got kicked off, even though you had a 15% stop.
Yeah, that was a joint effort, by the way. We're up 1.64 on that.
Yeah, it was a joint, but yeah, didn't work. It didn't lose anything. It was a buck and a half in the end of the day. This is the Zoom video. This was yours.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why, what the point of this, but you shorted it and it just, It's it's not doing well.
The whole point of it was the idea that everybody was buying this as the idea that, oh, my God, everybody's going to do teleconferencing because of coronavirus.
Oh, right, right, right. Yeah, it was a good – I think the logic is good. You're still there, so it's not dead yet. Also, the short on Amazon.com is up, but it's still hanging in there. It's not – it hasn't been kicked off. The other one's kicked off was Amyris. The insider's thing, which was – is still up 11% even though it got kicked off from a whipsaw. And Summit Bank, which is still on the list with a descending triangle. So we only have like 1, 2, 3 stocks left as again. And then you're going to short Williams-Sonoma because of your bad shopping experience I'm taking.
Yeah, think Bed Bath & Beyond. If anything is relative to the kitchen merchandise and retail area, I mean, I think the company that's most similar to it is a Williams-Sonoma. I mean, you could throw in a Walmart, of course, but they do a lot of other stuff. But these are... you know, pure play on kitchen gadgetry, bathroom crapola, and at even higher prices that people should be shunning. So we're going to stick with Williams-Sonoma on the short side.
I've got nothing this week. I want to get one more week in of the coronavirus before I start doing anything. So I'm going to.
How optimistic is that? Yeah, let's get a couple more weeks of the coronavirus in. Sounds good.
Another week of coronavirus.
Well, wishing everybody the best on that note. Well, I will see you again then next week.
Okay, talk to you then.
All right.
You've been listening in on a conversation with John C. Dvorak and Andrew Horowitz. Hope to be with you again soon. Bye-bye.
Now, I'm not broke, but badly bent. I'm not down to my last cent, cause I got a dollar, but it's my last dollar bill. Yes, sir. In my pockets, there's a dent. All my dough is nearly spent, but I got a dollar, and it's my last dollar bill. Oh, I'd love just one more buck fortune left me by chance. Now, here's a hint, I feel like a mint. You can hardly tell by a glance. I don't care, no millionaire can give me the icy stare, cause I got a dollar, my last dollar bill.